Support for this podcast comes from Bryn Mawr Communications. BMC produces a number of informative podcast series spanning a variety of topics in optometry. Discover a new show at itube.net/podcasts.
Hello and Happy New Year. We are entering year 4 of modern optometry, which is pretty exciting and unbelievable because it feels like the launch party in New Orleans was just a few months ago. Back to the subject of New Year's and the other recent holidays, I hope yours were filled with smiles, laughter, and happiness, and that many good memories were made. The staff of Modern Optometry made a New Year's resolution to always strive to bring our readers and listeners of the Mod Pod the most current, relevant, and interesting content that's essential to those looking to practice at the top of their license. If you have suggestions or ideas for us, we want to hear them. Email me at kroman@bmctoday.com. Well, let's get on with this episode then, shall we? Let's learn about some best practices for managing acute ocular pain from Jessica Steen, an assistant professor and director of the glaucoma service at Nova Southeastern University College of Optometry in Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
The term pain is often used as a catch-all phrase in healthcare to describe experiences ranging from mildly unpleasant to excruciating. The experience of pain is highly variable between individuals. It can't be objectively quantified, and it is deeply affected by emotional, social, and behavioral experiences. So how do we address our patients' ocular pain while mitigating the risk of adverse events associated with analgesics and ensure appropriate diagnosis and management of the condition causing that severe discomfort, all within an isolated clinical encounter? These inherent challenges, combined with the short recovery time of many acute anterior segment conditions that cause discomfort, may lead clinicians to avoid the subject of pain management altogether, which may lead to mood disruption, mental health challenges, challenges with sleep, work, and quality of life, even if just short term. Treating ocular pain must involve careful risk assessment and consideration of all available options. There are a wide variety of anterior and posterior segment conditions associated with ocular discomfort, including ocular surface disease, corneal abrasion, uveitis, ranging to optic neuritis, which do, of course, range in severity and underlying cause. After identifying and treating that underlying cause of the patient's ocular discomfort, management of the associated pain may be necessary, with the clear goal of reducing, not eliminating, pain to restore functionality. Keep in mind that the experience of pain differs between individuals and that healthcare professionals may have hidden biases about who should receive pain management. For example, women may have a greater sensitivity to acute stimuli and also may respond differently to pain medication. Ethnic and racial disparities also persist, such that minority individuals are less likely to be prescribed analgesics by providers. Our options for managing ocular pain include non-pharmacologic treatment, such as a bandage contact lens, topical cycloplegic, topical ocular non-steroidal anti-inflammatory agent, an NSAID, and oral pharmaceutical agents. For treating patients with acute pain, there are generally two categories of oral medications that can be considered: non-opioid medications and opioid medications. Non-opioid oral medications include prescription or over-the-counter NSAIDs, as well as acetaminophen. NSAIDs are highly effective suppressors of pain and inflammation, but they do carry the potential for side effect, including gastrointestinal bleeding directly related to their mechanism of action through the inhibition of cyclooxygenase. Acetaminophen is a centrally acting analgesic and antipyretic that does not have anti-inflammatory activity. Although it does not increase the risk of bleeding like NSAIDs, acetaminophen does carry a risk of liver toxicity, which is directly related to its dosage. Opioid medications are highly effective at treating ocular pain, but patients taking them have the potential to develop serious and life-threatening side effects, including respiratory depression, which may be fatal, dependency, misuse, and overdose, even when taken as prescribed. For all oral analgesics, the type of medication, dose, and specific dosing interval, remember, PRN dosing is not appropriate here, should be selected to minimize the duration of treatment and provide the lowest effective dose of medication possible to improve function. Before prescribing or recommending any oral analgesic for the treatment of severe ocular discomfort, there are additional steps that the provider should take to get an understanding of the patient's needs and to determine the best approach to managing their pain. Now, before prescribing an oral analgesic, perform a complete history. This includes a thorough review of medical history, including the patient's current medications, asking about their social history, including alcohol use, illicit substance use, and tobacco use, understanding their physical health, as well as their past experience with pain medication and current life stressors, which will allow for a better understanding of the patient's place on the pain spectrum, as well as an understanding of their therapeutic expectations, which begin to guide the type of treatment or class of medication. We also need to ensure to establish treatment goals and arrange for follow-up care. The goal of acute pain management is to treat for the shortest period of time necessary while ensuring that the patient is able to restore function while minimizing adverse effects. And finally, access an app-based or online medication interaction checker to help to minimize the risk of interaction between a proposed oral analgesic medication and the patient's current medications. When considering an opioid medication, additional screening, including history of substance abuse disorder, family history of substance abuse disorder, childhood trauma and depression, is required to help to mitigate medication-related risks, such as addiction, misuse, and overdose. Overall risk assessment of potential for behavioral response to an opioid medication is based on a combination of history, your clinical findings, and patient observation. Patients with an average risk for potential chronic opioid use, misuse, or abuse usually have objective signs related to localized symptoms of discomfort and a clear willingness to function at a typical level. They usually do not have individual or family history of substance abuse, a history of depression or anxiety disorder, or take benzodiazepines. Treatment with opioid medications should only be initiated when the benefits clearly outweigh the risks. In addition, be sure to advise patients that they should not drive a vehicle or operate power equipment while taking opioid medications, that they should avoid alcohol and other sedatives, and that they should not share medication with friends or family. Any leftover medication should be properly returned to an authorized collector, which may include pharmacies, collection receptacles at local law enforcement offices, or through mail back options. Now, bottom line, regardless of preferred treatment, contemporary acute pain management requires a biopsychosocial approach rooted in empathy to ensure validation and appropriate management of patient symptoms while minimizing risk of side effects and toxicity.
The takeaway here? When it comes to managing ocular pain, there is no one-size-fits-all approach, but a well-stocked toolbox is key to providing each patient with an individualized treatment plan. For additional insights on prescribing oral analgesics and opioids, find Dr. Steen's article on modernod.com. Now on to our next and last segment of the episode, in which Mania Madan, an optometrist at Vancouver Eye Doctor in Canada, separates the myths from the facts about platelet-rich plasma eye drops for the treatment of dry eye disease. Have a listen.
PRP eye drops are an option when conventional therapy fails to resolve dry eye disease. This is because the biological composition of PRP is similar to our natural tears. In addition, PRP therapy supplies several essential growth factors, vitamins, and cytokines that can facilitate the recovery of damaged corneal and conjunctival epithelium, thus reducing the signs and symptoms of ocular surface disease. Although the use of blood-based products for the treatment of dry eye disease is increasing, many optometrists are still not prescribing PRP eye drops. This may be because they don't have all the facts about this treatment modality. I will examine five common myths related to the use of PRP in the treatment of patients with dry eye disease. So here we go. Myth number one, there is no evidence that PRP is effective. Despite variability in how PRP is derived or prepared, most clinical studies today have confirmed that PRP drops are effective for the treatment of moderate to severe dry eye disease. They are helpful in both evaporative and aqueous deficient forms of dry eyes, and have also been successfully used in neuropathic and LASIK-induced dry eye disease. In addition, studies have demonstrated that PRP therapy can promote the healing of dormant corneal ulcers that have not resolved with other forms of treatment. PRP therapy has also been shown to significantly reduce the mean frequency of recurrent corneal erosions in patients with epithelial basement membrane dystrophy. Myth number two. Now, this tends to be a very common myth, which is PRP and autologous serum are the same. Although autologous serum and PRP are both blood-based products, they are not the same. PRP is considered superior to autologous serum because it contains higher concentration of growth factors and other platelet-derived factors. The crucial difference between the two products is that autologous serum does not contain platelets because they're eliminated in the process of making autologous serum. In contrast, PRP actually contains 2.5 to 8 times the concentration of platelets found in whole blood. Platelets are considered the tiny powerhouses for healing because they contain the growth factors needed for tissue recovery. Eliminating platelets significantly lowers the level of growth factors in autologous serum compared to the levels found in PRP. Another difference between autologous and PRP is that autologous serum can contain inflammatory cytokines, which can actually harm the ocular surface of patients with active autoimmune diseases such as secondary Sjogren's. Autologous serum is often diluted with saline to reduce the concentration of inflammatory cytokines and transforming growth factor beta. However, this diluting process further dilutes the concentration of healing growth factors in autologous serum. PRP, on the other hand, is not diluted with saline before it is dispensed. Furthermore, research has also suggested that PRP therapy can help restore the ocular surface through more potent, proliferative, and anti-inflammatory effects than observed with autologous or allogenic serum tears. Myth number three, access to PRP is limited. While this used to be true, but access to PRP is definitely increasing. Today, PRP is used in many medical fields such as dentistry and dermatology to help regenerate tissue and accelerate wound healing. Currently, there are more than 40 different systems available in the market that can make PRP for medical use. Optometrists can implement a PRP system in their own practice, or they can work in conjunction with local labs and pharmacies to make PRP eye drops for their patients. Optometrists can prescribe PRP as they would any other drop. PRP eye drops are often used 4 to 6 times per day for 3 months, and this therapy can be repeated as needed. Myth number four. Patients are not willing to pay for PRP. While PRP eye drops can be expensive and the cost is typically not covered by insurances, however, patients who receive a prescription for PRP eye drops are often in considerable distress. In my experience, when patients are educated about the potential benefits of PRP therapy, they're frequently willing to try it. A lack of insurance coverage is an issue with other treatments of dry eyes as well, including thermal pulsation and intense pulse light therapy, for example, are also not covered by insurances, and their cost can be prohibitive to the patient. It's our job as an optometrist to educate our patients about the best treatment option and let the patients decide what they're willing to pay for. Patients may favor using PRP eye drops because this treatment option is natural and it does not contain preservatives or stabilizers or additives found in artificial products. Now, here's our last myth. Myth number five. PRP is a treatment of last resort and is only prescribed by ophthalmologists. While PRP eye drops are not an entry-level treatment for ocular surface disease, but they do not have to be used as treatment of last resort either. Dry eye disease can seriously affect a patient's quality of life. Early diagnosis and treatment are the key to preventing inflammation and preserving the ocular surface. The TFOS-DUS 2 report recommended treatment with blood-based products as third-line therapy for the management of dry eye disease. It can be argued, however, that the potential advantages and safety profile of blood-derived eye drops compared to traditional therapies warrant the use of PRP eye drops as second-line therapy. Dry eye disease is a complex pathology and its prevalence is high. Regenerative strategies have emerged as promising therapy for treating dry eye disease. Even though more standardization and comparative studies are necessary, but for now we can confidently say that when conventional therapy does not adequately address moderate to advanced dry eye disease, PRP may be a helpful next step.
If you want to hear Dr. Madan go into more detail about the use of PRP for dry eye, go to iTube.net, click on the podcast tab, and find the April 2021 episode of To The Point with hosts Leslie Odell and Jackie Garlick. While you're there, consider subscribing to receive notifications of future episodes. Leslie and Jackie cover some great topics that are useful to practitioners looking to open or build their own dry eye practices, and the guests they speak with are top-notch. Well, I hate to say it, but this is the end of the line for this episode. I'll meet you back here in February with a fresh assortment of article offerings sure to pique your interest. And because it's the beginning of a brand new year, I'll give you the usual spiel. If you have any feedback, we'd love to hear it. Just email me at kroman@bmctoday.com. And find us on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, or Twitter. Thanks for listening. Until next time, be well.